Did you have a good weekend? What did you do? I know what you did, but you tell me.
Good morning, John. What did I get up to? Well, we talked last month about the upcoming Widowed and Young Way big picnic. So, unsurprisingly, that's what I was doing. So, yes, had a great weekend. There were over 40 picnics happening all over the UK, and our local one happened in Dunorland Park on Saturday. The sun shone beautifully. I caught the sunshine, which was good, but I had forgotten to put the sun cream on. Not a very good idea. And I'm recovering from having a frisbee square into the eyes, but otherwise, I am fine. It was a really great success. Everybody had loads and loads of fun, and so thank you to everybody who came and joined us.
Roughly how many people came?
I think we probably had 20 odd in the end. So it was a nice number. We sort of erected our space and eventually managed to get the gazebo pinned down, because for those of you who were around on Saturday, it was a tad windy.
It was.
And, you know, how many did it take of us to, like, actually get this thing? I think there was probably about 8 at one point trying to hold this thing down and get it securely grounded. But no, it was a fabulous, fabulous day, and I know everybody had lots and lots of fun.
Well, you mentioned it was a way picnic, but you better explain to those who weren't listening last month, I don't know why they weren't, what way is.
So way stands for Widowed and Young. It is a peer-to-peer support community charity that aims to support those who have been widowed before their 51st birthday. And that's widowed, widowers and widows. So whatever, you know, people identify as, it's those who've lost a partner, ultimately.
This picnic was for them and their families, if they had them.
Yeah, and then to drive awareness about, you know, what Widowed and Young actually does as a charity and how it supports its members. So it did go beyond just widowers and their families, which was nice to be able to create that awareness around it.
Right. So what are we going to do today?
So today I thought, for those who are aware, it was Mental Health Awareness Week last week. But I think, you know, it's not just one week. We have to recognise that our mental wealth, and I use that term very specifically, is something that is 52 weeks of the year, 24/7, and therefore we have to be conscious of it. Now, this year's theme was all around anxiety. And the scary statistic that I saw was that actually currently 60% of the UK population is experiencing anxiety, which, that for me is a pretty scary statistic. That's sort of like pretty much two-thirds of us are experiencing some level of anxiety for whatever reason. Whether that is because of cost of living, whether that's because of personal events that are going on within their own lives. But for whatever reason, almost two-thirds of the UK population are experiencing anxiety. But I think what makes that even more scary for me personally is the fact that most people don't talk about the anxiety, and it's the stigma and the shame associated with that, but then silence breeds the anxiety, silence breeds the shame, and we can't then move forward. And I think that is the bit that I think we have to recognise, that no one week in a year is going to make a difference. This is something we have to really consider for the impact that it has on us as individuals.
So anxiety can take different forms. I'll throw the curveball in, as I normally do at this time.
I knew it was going to come at some point.
What if we don't recognise what we're anxious about? Now, I'll give you time to think on that one, because if I'm anxious or something like that, I can get quite ratty.
Yeah.
Like I was trying to renew something on the phone on Friday night, and I kept going round and round in ratty circles, and I was getting very angry with the thing. But
yeah.
Now, other times, you know, why am I feeling ratchet? What's making me feel anxious? And there's nothing to feel anxious about, as far as I'm aware.
No, and I think sometimes it's a case of there is a level of good anxiety when it's around anticipating something that we haven't perhaps done before, and therefore we're anxious because we don't know how it's going to turn out for us. It's when it reaches a tipping point where it is actually starting to perhaps give us physical symptoms or preventing us from actually taking a step forward. That's the tipping point where we feel we need to do something more than just sitting with where we're at. But to answer the question as to what to do if we don't know what's causing that anxiety, the question for me goes to a place of asking ourselves is, what's really going on here? Is just pausing in that moment and going, what is this? And just being open to whatever comes to our minds at that point in time. So let me take your example. And I don't know what was infuriating you with the process that you were doing.
The internet and just trying to... my phone has got two different email addresses and one...
And so I would challenge that what was really going on and what was the emotion and the anxiety about was perhaps about how it was difficult, how you felt you hadn't necessarily got the tools, in inverted commas, to be able to do the job simply, and the tool itself wasn't making it simple for you to make it simple. And so very quickly, there was a level of anxiety and frustration associated with it.
Well, money was involved because I was trying to renew my TN card.
Right.
Because I got a discount in the restaurant we were in.
Ah, okay.
And I couldn't resolve it, so I didn't get my discount. So...
And often, actually...
And I thought I was on automatic renewals. I'm going to have to sort out with Jess later on what's going on here.
But it's interesting you say that money was involved. And I think so often, when we apply a layer of fear that we're not going to have money or fear that we can't afford something, that fear can drive that added anxiety.
Yes, indeed. Right, let me just line up what we're going to play next so you can have a little bit of break and we can come on to it again. There we are. I'm not going to play... Post Malone and Chemical here on West Kent today, on West Kent Radio 95.5, 106.7 FM, online, on your smart speaker, Morse code, semaphore. We're communicating. It's going to be quill and parchment next week, so stand by for that. Okay, with me this morning, trying to keep my anxiety levels down, is Laura Toop. We've been talking about the fact that Mental Health Week was last week, but mental health... difficulties don't go away. So let's pick up from where we were.
No, as you rightly say, John, it's we don't have a week that is just, well, this week I'm going to be anxious and next week anxiety is just going to disappear. Our emotions are with us 24/7, 365 days of the year, and I think one of the biggest challenges, as we were saying at the top of the show, is the fact that there's so much shame and stigma associated around this. And, some reports suggest that, almost 50% of us, if not more, do not say anything because we fear judgment, we fear criticism, we fear that it will impact our credibility, for example, at work, and especially at work, we don't say that, where we're at with things. But that can create an awful lot of loneliness and isolation. And because, Harriet Lerner, even in her book, The Dance of Fear, talks about this idea that, courage goes into hiding. So our anxiety breeds when we learn that it's not safe to talk openly and honestly and to be ourselves. As I say, the challenge of that is this increase of loneliness and isolation, and it continues this what I call a conversation for one, i.e. a conversation with ourselves, where we can only go round that same conversation so many times before we realise we get the same answer. We have to make it a conversation for two. But making that conversation for two can be so, so daunting. But the impact to our, you know, mental wealth and health can be absolutely devastating if we don't make that into a conversation for two. Not least then, you know, if we allow it to get so far, it can begin to impact our physical health ultimately. You know, we were talking earlier on about, you know, the loneliness and isolation is very high amongst, you know, the age bracket 16 to 34 year olds. You know, we talk often about the loneliness experienced by those over 65 and the anxiety that they experience, but actually research suggests that it's actually much, much higher in the category of, you know, 16 to 34 year olds. And, you know, we talked previously about, you know, that is the where men's suicide rates are at, you know, they're most prevalent, very sadly. And again, I think a lot of that is around the shame and stigma of talking up and openly to other people.
So how do we open up to other people? How do we make the conversation from internal to involving, so it becomes a two-way conversation?
I'd like to say it's as easy as just clicking a switch or whatever, or flicking a switch. But I suppose it depends where your level of anxiety has got to. There are some certain simple things that we can do. Now, I am the great fan of the post-it note. And before anybody laughs at the idea of having a conversation with a post-it note, I know when I've come up with something new, I can get quite anxious about that. So I will put down my thoughts onto a post-it note and try and have a conversation with that before I will then go and find my inner trusted friends who I can just bounce out, you know, this is what I'm thinking, what do you think? Can I get your perspective with this particular thing?
So talking to pencil and paper, pen and paper, first of all.
Yeah.
It's a positive way of talking to yourself.
It is, absolutely. And I think part of it is this idea of you're getting it out of your head into black and white. And when we can visualise things, there is a level of peace that comes with it, because it's not running around your head at a million miles an hour. And then you can start to make sense of it. Now, a lot of people will journal. I consider myself a recovering perfectionist, so therefore writing a journal when potentially I'm not using the right pen, the paper's not right, and I don't know where to start, it's why I use my post-it notes. Because I can start anywhere, it doesn't matter the quality of the pen, and it doesn't matter if I've even spelt it right, and it doesn't have to have an order because I can change all of that. So for an anxious, overwhelmed brain like mine can sometimes be, that's a good place to start, rather than, you know, the perfectionist, nice white piece of paper, where do I start? It's got to have the right first sentence, which only just drives the anxiety even more. But I think, you know, if there's a fear over, actually, I don't even know where to start, don't even know what the words are, because that too can be a problem. I'm just not feeling, there's something I'm feeling, but I can't verbalise it. I would go to a place of what I call self-expression beyond words. And that is nothing more than, as it implies, is this idea where you could get behind, you know, a camera and go and out into anywhere. Could even just be a mobile phone that you're taking. But the idea is that you are slowing down sufficiently and focusing totally on what you're taking a picture of that calms the mind sufficiently to be able to then sit in that moment. So call it a kind of meditation, but you're still doing something. Because if you've got an overactive, overwhelmed, anxious mind, then going straight from there to doing meditation, that's quite a giant leap. But doing something, so I swim, for example, and find that very calming. Because again, I've slowed down my mind, I've totally focused, and that then allows me to then think very much less about the chaotic stuff that's going on, but be able to sit down and go, okay, so what am I now going to do? What's the first step I'm going to take now?
Right, further break.
Yeah, why not?
Give your voice a chance to recover.
Yeah.
It's not just for a week. We all have mental health problems, and sometimes they can get on top of us. And we were talking about anxiety. Excuse me. How to deal with it and how to stop coughing when you're on air. So I'm going to hand over to Laura for our next bit.
So John can cough nicely over there. No, I think it is, as we're saying, I think the biggest problem is about the shame and stigma associated with it, and therefore the isolation and loneliness that we can so often feel associated with anxiety and our mental health. And, you know, I think it's, you know, we started to talk about ways that we can manage that level of anxiety and talked about, you know, journaling, making sure it's a conversation for two, not a conversation for one. We talked about the idea of having, you know, what I call self-expression beyond words, this idea of, you know, photography, but it's singing, it's all of those things that can just release us in that moment, you know, to lower our anxiety levels, our stress levels. But I think ultimately the end of the day, it's about a care and compassion of ourselves and recognizing that our emotional and mental health, in managing that takes a lot of energy. Do not underestimate the amount of energy that uses. And so pushing ourselves to, well, I've just got to get to the other side of here. I've just got to do a little bit more. Or I'll go to the gym and that's going to answer all of it. That's fine. We can operate at 125% for a short amount of time. But at some point, something will give if we are not careful. And we need to recognise that when we're experiencing something new that we've not done, that inevitably creates a level of anxiety because we are doing something that is called dynamic learning. We are learning in the moment and that uses energy. And therefore, you know, pushing on through and being, you know, running around is not necessarily the solution. Being busy isn't the solution to our anxiety. Sometimes actually it is just to sit and do not very much, but we're not very good at doing much.
Some people get frightened because they're not used to silence. We fill our days up with noise.
Yeah.
And so to actually stop and be silent and try and work things out is not natural to us.
No, not at all. And I think that's why I draw on this idea where, you know, the idea of picking up, you know, a phone or a camera and going out to calm the mind by focusing the mind on just taking pictures of, you know, notice what you notice outside. You know, maybe it's a robin, maybe it's something that you've seen in passing and you're just literally in that moment taking a photograph of it. That in itself just stops the outside world noise for just a few minutes that can actually really ground you. A lot of people use and suggest breath work to calm yourself in the moment. It's not something I particularly use personally, but I know a lot of people who do and gain great benefit from it. You know, meditation is the one that everybody pretty much draws upon. But again, I would go to a place of, if your mind is so anxious and so overwhelmed, going from that to saying suddenly silence is just a leap too far.
But well, you mentioned in the break that going swimming helps.
Yeah, definitely.
Because you're concentrating on something else. Or going out into the garden.
Yeah.
Doing some gardening. Something that is totally different.
Yes.
And occupies your mind. So it gives the subconscious time to get working.
Absolutely. And it's back to your point, John, about this idea of sort of tuning out the noise and replacing it with just focus on something. Because you're still doing something. It's not, you know, it's not total silence. Because very few of us can sit in total silence. Because we're just so used to being busy the whole time. Kent Radio.
You're listening to West Kent Today on West Kent Radio. It's currently up 12 minutes to 11. Laura Toop is with me this morning. We've been talking about anxiety and I'm getting a bit anxious. I keep looking at the time to make sure we've got enough to get everything in. So where do we get up to?
Where we got up to, we were just talking about, you know, we don't necessarily have to go and meditate as a source of managing our anxiety. There are many things that we can do because people don't like sitting in silence, and doing things like gardening, swimming, photography, singing, dancing, all of these things. We're still doing something, but in that moment we're completely and utterly focused and, you know, ignoring the noise that's going on, and in that just gives us a level of grounding that makes us feel stronger in ourselves to be able to deal with this, you know, uncontrollable world that we're currently operating in. I think it's sometimes it can be a little bit daunting doing those things, but you know, if there is something that you are interested in, passionate about, then go and find, you know, a community group that will help you do that. Oh, task isn't really the right word, but I'm, you know what I mean? There's plenty of clubs out there that offer, you know, you don't have to be, you know, the next budding, you know, Turner or Constable, but there are plenty of painting groups where you could just get together and have some fun talking with other people. You've got a shared passion in the fact that you both enjoy art, that in itself can actually reduce a level of anxiety and concern, etc. And you build new friendships that you can then share stuff with. And so again, coming back to what I was describing earlier on, what you're trying to do is create a conversation for two rather than the conversation for one, i.e. a conversation with your mind, because that's where the anxiety literally breeds, in that silence.
For young people at the moment, the anxiety is taking exams.
Yes, indeed.
And the advice we're giving is just as good for them.
Yeah.
Although there'll be parental pressure to revise and not forget anything on the day. And exams are an enormous pressure on people's lives. It's this thing about success and failure, which it's artificial to a certain extent.
No, absolutely. And it's all about the level of attachment and expectation we place on achieving what I call the golden carrot, the goal, the getting success, and success is passing the exam. Fuel that, you know, society's expectation, fuel that parental expectation, and then you've got, you know, this individual taking the exam going, whoa, and then I'm applying my own pressure on this, and before long, this carrot that we're going after, the success of the exam, it's like enormous. And actually, to actually consider it as to, what do I want to get out from this? What is the next step in my having this golden carrot? What is it getting me? We can then start to put it into some level of context.
But that's also a pressure in itself, because even when I was taking exams, and now, you know, I don't know what I want to do or what I wanted to do. You know, people saying, you know, go to college, university, or whatever, and nothing really appealed. I applied for several jobs and had interviews, and some of the interviews were so easy, I thought, do I really want to work here? But it's how we... My parents got a bit livid I didn't take any jobs to begin with. as long as I paid me rent, that was fine. But how, you know, how do we deal with the unknown in that respect? You know, people are saying, well, you know, in some communities, Asian particularly, there's an expectation to become doctors, lawyers, something professional. You know, I just wanted to be lazy all my life. I never had the time.
I know, I hear you on the expectation front. You know, I am not going to lie that I hated exams. I'd actually literally freeze. And that's actually where the post-it notes idea that I talked about earlier on came from, was because I would literally sit there and go, I know lots of stuff, but could I put it down on a piece of paper? I'd literally freeze. My geography teacher used to get so annoyed with me because he'd say, Laura, even if you wrote your name, you'd actually get a C. You know, that would be a good start. And so I devised this way of, I'd just write notes first on my post-it notes, and then I'd just write. That was how I got over this mental barrier. I think for me, it was very much this thing around saying, what I needed to do was just to get to the end of that 3 hours. That was all that success was to be able to get through that. I had written something on the paper, i.e. focusing on now. You know, it's a tomorrow is not a given, ultimately. And therefore, with the way the world is evolving so rapidly, we cannot predict how all of that's going to happen. The moment is now. That's where we have to focus our efforts and our energies. And I think that's probably my biggest observation and learning of my own journey, that if I had really focused on, literally, I've just want to write down what I know on a piece of paper to get to the end of my 3 hours or however long that exam is, then I think I probably wouldn't have frozen quite so much. Because we don't know all of the answers. The answers haven't presented themselves. I was the classic, well, I'll go into accountancy. That was the worst. Because, oh, what a surprise. That was what my father did. Oh, I am not an accountant. I can't profess to be one. And one of the things that, you know, I've gone through so many reincarnations of my career over the years. But one of the things that I have really discovered for myself is when I worked with myself and the things with which I am passionate about success, in inverted commas, now success means very different things for different people, has actually been mine, and opportunities have come to me because I have just been comfortable with, you know, where I am right now and worked with the things in which I'm passionate about. And exams aren't for everybody. No, you're absolutely right.
But I failed maths O-level 5 times. Trigonometry, geometry, algebra, no good whatsoever. I can't get my mind around logarithms, things like that. And I really did get upset about it. Why can't I do this? And then I think it was the maths teacher said, don't worry, John. So long as you can add up at snooker, subtract the darts and count your change, you're not going to need much more in life. And on the whole, that's quite right, because it's basic arithmetic.
No, and I couldn't agree more. I could not agree more, John.
Yes, we do need mathematicians. We need physicists and chemists. That's not me.
No, absolutely. But we don't need an entire population only of those people. No. We'd all become robots then, you know? Yeah. So I absolutely agree. I think it is, we all bring something very unique to the world, and success for everybody looks very differently. It's not necessarily because we've passed an exam.
No, definitely not. Well, excuse me. Well, thank you, Laura.
Thank you, John.
very quick morning this morning.
Oh, where did that go? An hour's gone.
So we're back again in a month's time.
Yeah, we will be,
and
indeed.
We'll be looking at, well, we'll be in June then, won't we?
Oh, gosh.
Halfway through the year, looking forward to Christmas. Now that's...
Don't wash the remaining 6 months away. Gosh.